on our unscreened open lines tonight, entitled Naked Lines. And once again, not to be confused with Naked Callers, although I'm thinking we may have a few of those. In fact, we definitely have some listeners that way. Well, never mind. This email box is insane. It's the good insane. You can send an email to me anytime you want to. I'll look at it and answer you back as quick as I can. It's just John B. at coasttocoastam.com, J-O-H-N-B as in Bravo, at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, we're going to carry on through the night with some more of your calls. Got a bunch of them, some interesting people coming up, so stand by. Whatever happened to the guy that used to talk about, who was that guy? J.C., that's who it was. Mr. Boiling Pits of Sewage. Wonder what happened to him. Wonder if he's all right. If you're listening, J.C., we visit you, you freak. You should check in with us. You owe us that much after everything that you've done to the program over the past couple decades. Okay. All right, I've said my piece, and I'm done. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's go to Wild 5 and speak to Dave. He's in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hey, Dave, how are you doing up there?
John B. Wells, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing all right. I think the weather's a little better where I am. How are the people doing up there? How are you doing?
Well, we were out of power for like 3 days, and I'm on the 24th floor of a 31-story high-rise, okay?
Yeah.
Backup generator didn't work, okay? So we were basically a prisoner in the apartment for like 4 days with 3 days worth of food.
Okay.
Wasn't pretty.
No.
Finally got my internet back today and the television, so I'm pretty happy about that because I was going stir crazy.
So it was, you couldn't leave unless you wanted to do the stairs, of course.
Well, I'm not a young person as I used to be, but I did it once, coming up once, and it was hard. But the reason I called is that my life has been blessed with extraterrestrials and UFOs. 17, my friend Jeff and I were going back to my house. We saw these lights. We stopped in the middle of a road, 926, in Westtown, Pennsylvania. And this flying rectangle just blah, 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 floated over us. So I remember looking up and seeing piping on the bottom of this thing. And it just was so huge. And it went off in the distance and disappeared, okay?
Yeah.
1988, coming home from my cousin's house. See lights in the sky, pulled in this park. This light in a ray of a diamond flew over me. I started crying. And these guys were laughing at me. They go, look, this guy's freaking out. I put it up and they said, what the heck is that? And I said, I think that's your first UFO. So like, oh, that's cool, man, cool. So I went home, blah, 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 called Teterboro Airport. I said, give me somebody in the tower. And the guy goes, oh, officially we have to say those were altar lights. I said, no, didn't make any noise. He goes, well, that's officially what we have to say. So I pressed the guy, FAA guy. He said, can I tell you something? I said, yeah. He said, the craft landed on our runway.
Oh, boy.
Are you there?
No, I'm here, all right. I'm just listening.
No, but I mean, that's an FAA guy saying a craft landed at Teterboro Airport, you know? And of course, you're never going to hear anything about this on the news. And
Teterboro, that's not exactly a small airport.
No. John Travolta, when he flies in here, goes to Teterboro.
Travolta, yeah, he's something else, isn't he? He's a good pilot. I'll tell you what, it's easy to get some nice toys like he has when you got the dough, you know? Got a Mustang, yeah, and a 747, all this stuff. Gosh,
no, he has a 747? Wow.
Yeah, he does. Well, he converted one to live in. He made it into an apartment.
During the height of the hurricane, it went on the balcony and started singing Sandy from Greece. The wind got harder, so he had to run inside that house. Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
Well, John, I'm sorry.
Listen, let me ask you something. You know, I'm always looking to pick on somebody. No, okay. Not really. I'm just curious. How did the authorities handle this disaster? This Hurricane Sandy? Well, it wasn't even a hurricane. It was like this very serious tropical storm, Sandy, that caused so much bloody damage. How about that for a name for it?
I think pretty much it was everybody kind of handled it like very, very calmly and nicely. I didn't see anything on the news, but I know the seaside, the shore is, forget about it. It's the boardwalk, nothing is there.
Yeah.
As a kid, I used to go to Seaside Heights all the time. I worked at Asbury Park as a DJ. I was a radio DJ, and my radio name is Dangerous, because my second radio job, I worked at an FM Country, and I messed up in the studio, and I said the S word on the air. And I don't mean surprise, okay?
Yeah, right, gotcha.
So my program director comes in and said, yeah, we just said, we're not, we have to call you Dangerous. So it kind of lasted me for a number of years in radio broadcasting, which I miss dearly. So
you were the most dangerous man in broadcasting at the time. Okay,
well,
I get it.
You know, it's funny. There's this radio station in New York called KTU, and they're a top 40 dance station. I call this guy up, Hollywood Hamilton, all the time. And without him knowing it, he's recording me, and I hear myself on the radio. I'm going, that's very cool. So I call him up, and I say stuff, you know, and he laughs, and if he likes, he puts it on the air. But, and so I miss radio, really. And John D. Wells, you've got, when I first heard you, I thought you were African-American, you know, a.k.a. maybe Don, reincarnation of Don Cornelius.
From that man.
Show. Yeah. But I found you on the internet, and you're just a big white guy.
Yeah, that's the truth, you know, although I have told people on occasion I am the blackest white man that you know, so they don't know what the hell to make of that, so, you know, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you know what you do.
But I'll tell you, if you didn't get this awesome career as a broadcaster, you could have been a football player. I mean, the whole football team.
Oh, I don't know, man. Poor Randy White, I heard a story about him. He had to call home and say and tell his wife, I'm not really sure how to get back to the house. I don't want that many concussions. Those guys, you know, they get a lot of money, but they sure earn it, I'll tell you. When somebody says, he's an old quarterback, he's 30, it's like, old, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think of Michael Vick? You like Mike Vick?
You know what? The fact of the matter is I avoid sports like the plague because I get so jacked up. All it does
right,
is,
right.
I'm serious. It makes me nuts, and, you know, I don't need any more.
Right.
I have the government, the New World Order. And Armageddon and Nibiru and Fukushima to stress me out.
I
do not need professional sports.
You had the other night, I don't know what night it was, but you had this remote viewer on?
Yeah. I didn't have a remote viewer on. Are you sure? I don't remember a remote viewer.
He was talking about everything. And talking about the aliens in the Pacific.
Are you talking about last night?
Friday night?
Yeah.
Well, whatever it was, it scared the bejesus out of me. As soon as the show, I listen to the whole show, and sometimes I fall out. But this show, I said I had to stay awake. I ran to the computer, tried to find maybe there was some live chat about the show, because really, it scared the loving daylights out of me. But, you know, it's what's going on, you know. I guess you have to realize, you know, just come to reality. You know, it's the world we live in.
I get a feeling when you are as involved and fully immersed as these people are who look into all these phenomena around us,
right.
I suspect you come up with a lot of talking points that would just absolutely chase everybody out of the coffee shop except the few really cool ones who wanted to think outside of the proverbial box.
Right.
You know, you can't just talk about this stuff to anybody. They'll look at you like you're nuts and start, you know, shuffling away.
When I talk about the UFOs in the Pacific, they're like, okay, sure, right.
And yeah, now, you're insane.
When they come knocking at your door, you're going to say, you know, Dave was right, you know? But, I don't think any of my E.T. stuff was a curse. I don't know how I handled it as a young child. I really don't, to tell you the truth, but you do. I mean, I didn't scream out at night for my parents. I just handled it. I don't know. To this day, I can't figure out how I did it.
You just do. You just handle it. That's how you know. That's how the whole civilization, the whole race of humankind has evolved. With people, handled it.
I think you're awesome, and I like the stuff about Star Trek and stuff. I did meet William Shatner once, which was really cool.
So did I. I complimented him on his singing.
Well, I didn't know. Please know. Don't put his stuff on the air, please. I will shut the radio off. No,
I won't.
Really cool.
I promise I won't. I won't do that to you.
You've had some weird music on tonight. You know who you should. What you should play? Boston. Remember Boston?
We can do that. We can do that at some point.
What a great group they were. I'm showing my age, but that was a great song.
There's so much great music from that era.
Oh man, well you were in a band, right?
I was. I fooled around a little bit with some music over the years, actually. Some of the stuff is not music I would want to be known for. I'm sorry, man. We've got a big-ass latency here, and we keep stepping on each other. I'll be quiet. You speak. Go ahead.
Okay, no, I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. I'm very hyper.
Yep.
You're steering the starship perfectly, and I'm just going to say one thing. We're running out of power, Captain.
yeah, we are. It's turning into depletium. All right. Hey, you take care of yourself up there, and tell anybody who cares that there's a huge, huge audience of listeners who are tuned in to what's going on up there and are sensitive to what they've been going through. So, best to everybody. You know, we think about you. Terry in Toronto, Canada, on the international line, you know.
Hi there, John.
Thanks for hanging in there so long. How are you tonight? Hey,
no problem. Doing fine. I just recently became familiar with another one of your bodies of work, and that is as narrator on the Aliens Files.
Yeah, I mentioned that just a minute ago, yeah.
Yeah. I was, what I wanted to ask you about it is, how long have you been affiliated with the show? I'm not even sure how long the show has been on. And is there one particular episode of the show that really grabbed you? Do you have a favorite there?
There are a couple of, you know what, I can answer that question this way without giving anything away. Every show has something in it that I have not heard of. Because I'm not really a ufologist. I'm interested, but you know, if you're going to study that stuff, if you're going to do something, do it all the way in, or you know, just observe from the outside and don't meddle. And so all of the episodes have something. I do have my favorites, and that is and I'll just give you a little teaser for the show, and that is Nazis and UFOs. I'm very keen about this Nazi thing because of all the stuff that they came up with in such a short period of time. That's always been fascinating to me, and how many of their designs from the late 30s and early 40s wound up as, you know, like frontline aircraft that we're flying now and have been since, well, really ever since the F-86 Sabre jet.
I've heard stories about that, and I'll look forward to seeing a show that's dedicated to that.
Yeah, it's like, it appears to me that they never completely went away and have, and there's a distinct possibility in my own mind that they still wield great power in absolute, you know, master race grade secrecy.
Mm.
Not that I'm assigning that that characteristic to that crew at all, but it's very interesting. There was I can't quote it directly at the moment, but Aleister Crowley visited Hitler and said, and he was asked by Hitler if he was from the dark side, and he said, "Well, I can tell you this: if I were from the light side, you would not want to talk to me."
Hmm.
So, who knows? Maybe we will, and maybe we won't. But we'll keep looking, and we'll talk about it here. What else is on your scope tonight?
Oh, not much. Just kind of watching what has been going on south of the border for the last week. It's being detached from it. It's sort of like a really interesting reality TV series,
you know,
from our perspective. We're kind of very minor stakeholders, but we don't get a say in it. And quite frankly, regardless of who would end up winning the election, in terms of relationships between Canada and the U.S., there probably was not going to be a whole lot of difference.
No, we've always been friends, and it should remain that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can find that. Thanks for asking about Unsealed Alien Files. You can, you know, it plays at various times. It's all over the place. It's in syndication, so there's not much telling what channel it'll show up on, but it's out there, and it comes on Saturday nights. So watch the show and then join us on Coast. And thanks a lot for calling. Take care, man. Thank you very much. Well, Bert, Ormond Beach, Florida. Bert on Wild 2. Are you there, Bert?
Hey, hi, Mr. Wells. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Okay. I want to talk about Pythagoras, and I want to expand upon him. I would like to posit to you and the audience that he is part of an interworld government, and he is a graduate of our planet. I come to a great deal of knowledge from within. I had a lot of mystical experiences that proved to me, number one, that reincarnation is a fact. And I would like to try to tie together all these loose things. But before I go through that, I would just want to say that you have a very peaceful and calming disposition, and it's really helpful, and I want to try to twist into a little bit of a positive spin.
Okay.
These, you know, this core group of evil people, like you said, are being exposed with the manipulation of the monies. They're more afraid of us than we are of them. And the most, the biggest thing they want to keep us from knowing is that we are God, literally and physically. You are God, I am God, and every human being is an incarnation of God. It's just that they have a different level of awareness of that.
All right.
Okay. I'm the child of a factory worker. First of all, my father was taken in from his native soil in Poland by the Nazi regime at 17, thrown on a train, thrown in 60 below zero weather, thrown out of the train and said, build a shelter or die. And so he was in forced labor camp. So he was in the real deal. And he's looking around and says, hey, you know, I'm Polish. These guys are German. And they're freezing to death, and they're killing each other, and they want to be home with their farms. But anyways, so that was my first bent. But you talked about if it doesn't boil down to a battle between good and evil, it doesn't make any sense, and that's correct. So let's go back to the Star Trek paradigm, which we're all familiar with. God's Captain Kirk, and Spock is Lucifer, light bearer. And God says, I'm lonely. I'm going to create a child in my image and likeness. And I'm going to put myself inside him and her. And Lucifer says, yeah, okay, fine. Well, everybody has a threefold flame in their heart. I know I'm going all over the place. I'm schizophrenic. But what I wanted to say is that Pythagoras, And like you said, the circle, life is simple. And the people don't want us to know the occult knowledge, like Chase, J.P. Morgan. He said millionaires don't study astrology, billionaires do.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He meant it.
And he meant it, too, because the world, life is simple. Like you said, a circle. Notes on a scale, Pythagoras. Okay, I posit that he is the ascended master Kut Humi, and he's doing well, and he plays his organ. But as a child, now I'm gonna jog your memory a little bit here.
Okay.
Do you remember the Questor tapes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe I do.
That was a thumbnail sketch for our audience. That had licensing problems. It was by the venerable Gene Roddenberry, and it was a made-for-TV movie in 1974.
Yeah.
And it was about a robot, and we, you know, these cultural themes of robots and aliens. I mean, it such permeates our atmosphere, and. He didn't quite get the last part of his programming. He had superhuman strength, the Uberman, and he had to find his creator. And he saw a Noah's Ark children playing on a Noah's Ark, and he says, "You know, I got to find my creator, the questor for the creator."
Yeah.
And the guy was a computer scientist beyond reckoning, and it was a cult, hidden place to go. And I'm telling you, those people do exist. And this civilization is not all that, three bags of potato chips.
Thanks very much for your call, man. We're going to have to take our break now. But say, as far as I'm concerned, you can call anytime you want to. We shall carry on through our, well, what do we got? We got an hour and a half left to go. So let's make use of it. We'll give the numbers again. And some people are on hold. And we look forward to speaking with them. Unscreened open lines. They're naked. On Coast to Coast AM. Of course, a lot of fun to just stay up all night with you. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing tonight, staying up all night with our naked lines, unscreened lines, you know. I mean, I'll tell you, you are just the best listeners on this or any other planet. Okay, tell you what, Let's talk to Dusty in Amarillo, Texas. First-time caller. Been waiting a while, too. Dusty, are you there?
Hi, how you doing? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Say, is that steak place still over there where if you eat the 72-ounce steak in an hour, they'll give it to you for nothing?
The Big Texan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I got to try that one of these days. They're always trying to eat that big old steak to get it for free.
How many people have actually, any statistics on how many people have actually done it?
I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay.
There are plenty that do accomplish the task, but I've never tried it myself.
I hear you got to have the potato and the salad too, or it doesn't count.
And I think you got to eat the fat and the gristle and the whole ball of wax.
Yeah, it's got to disappear. 72 ounces. God, can you imagine?
I've watched some subjects attempt it, but I never stayed long enough to see if they made it or not.
Well, thanks for indulging me with that question. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I've got a list of things that I had to try to accumulate. I know that this is basically an open discussion type night, but last year or so that I've been listening, there have been many times I wanted to participate, but this just turned out to be the night that it is. One of the things that's been on my mind lately is I seem to have a pretty contrasting view to the majority about the whole death thing. To explain that, there's a lot of laws that are out there for the intention of preventing death or injury to people, like such as the seatbelt laws, the helmet laws, driving laws, drinking and drug laws, killing laws, gun laws, things like this.
Oh, yes. Keep us safe, please.
And it seems to me that there's people out there that are pro-lifers that want to make sure that all of the possibilities of life get their opportunity to be fulfilled and come to fruition.
Right.
But it seems that overpopulation is something that seems to me to be a real present danger.
It is.
So why are we trying so hard to prevent people from dying when death is a natural part of life? It's everyone's got one. Everyone's going to get one. And just, you know, let people die some. And you know, I know it sounds harsh, but, you know, some people will be killed, and that's okay.
And well, yeah, I understand what you mean. It's, you know, we two, 3 weeks ago, well, back on the 13th of October, we did the Legends of Rock. And I don't know what the chances of this ever happening, but in case you didn't catch the show, it was Paul Rodgers of Bad Company in the first hour, Leslie West of Mountain the second hour, Jack Cassidy from Jefferson Airplane the third hour, and Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull for the fourth hour, just sitting around talking.
Wow.
Ian Anderson was so cool. He just said, you know, look, I said, actually, it started off with immigration. And he said something. I went, well, you know, I wasn't aware, Ian, that the UK had an immigration problem. And he knew I was kidding him. He goes, oh, well, we don't want to talk about that. And then it got into the population thing. And it's like, we have to come up with a responsible way to control the population. And he said that women are going to have to understand that they control that.
Well, one of the things that's been prevalent in my life situation and circumstances is I have a 94-year-old grandmother who has lost most of her faculties. Her cognitive abilities have declined to the point where she's basically just being kept alive by a nursing home that's prolonging her life and costing, I don't know how much, but enormous amount of money through her Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like that's a huge amount of money for us to, as a nation, spend to prolong the lives of people who, were it not for our efforts to prolong their life, probably would have passed away just of natural causes at some point or another. So why do we spend so much of our resources to keep people alive who, you know, I know it sounds harsh, and I love her to death. She's sweet and amazing. But her life is no longer what it used to be. Why can't we just let, you know, expire with the natural process of evolution, the survival of the fittest, and all that, without making such a big deal out of it? Doesn't make
the measure
or ugly about it. You know, it means that
the measure of civilization is the distance between the people and their waste products, and their sensitivity toward each other. But I, you know, if you, it all comes down to groups of people who are having a maybe a little bit more than their fair share of the childbearing.
Right.
Because amongst other groups, the population is declining. It's like the Europeans are disappearing, the Russians are disappearing, and the Muslims are not disappearing. They have large families, and there's lots of them. So,
and I don't know where the line is, or how we create a new reality where we.
Well,
can
it's
gonna, okay.
It's a hell of a task, man. Because we're gonna have to get everybody on the same page, you know.
Well, there's so many people that believe, whether it be Christianity or some other deity type faith, that, you know, so they have an eternal life coming. Yet, why are we trying so hard to cling to this one and prevent the death of it when our eternal life, you know, I'm what, 14.5 billion years old if you count the age of all my atoms in my body right now.
Yeah, probably older than that, man, if you're made out of stars, which you are.
Yeah, so we've got eternal life, obviously, whether you're an atheist or not.
Yeah, I get you. It just opens the doors to so many different ethical questions.
Sure.
I mean, you feel sorry for people who are starving. This huge, you know, population, this civilization. It's not the best civilization going necessarily, but the people are happy and they're productive. But every once in a while they get hit with a terrible disease or a terrible war or a terrible famine or a terrible drought, and it's like, no, we want to help them, and so we do help them. And they build their population back up. We help them for a few years, and they procreate, and they make more kids. And then before long, you know, 10, 15 years goes by, and then they turn on each other and kill off 2, 3, 4 million of each other. It's just, it's weird. So it's like,
and
why
I say
are you?
That initially we should learn how to have restraint and just say, it's unfortunate that y'all are, you know, experiencing such a difficult time, but that's kind of the way life is. And I know, like I said, that sounds kind of like a harsh approach to it, but, you know.
Well, it does, Dustin.
Every cell in our body, you know, sometimes some of them get sick and they die, and we don't go, you know, really over the top to try to save that cell or that group of cells. We sometimes get an amputation. You know,
people don't really like being having their thinking done for them, I would like to think that women have a lot more power than they are exercising. As far as controlling things, just take care of what you got.
Now,
you know,
the guy that was before me, I had something that I agreed totally with him. He said something about, we are all God and everyone is God. And I don't know if I could read a little poem that I just wrote tonight to you that kind of sums this up.
Well, read it right quick for us, and we're going to take a break, but your poem will be the last thing that the audience hears before we go to break. Hit me.
Awesome.
And them. Us.
Called One Life. One life that you will recognize, but you will rarely see. It lives a life that it was made to live until it's free, doing what it knows to do and knowing what to be. One life among so many others, much like you or me. It has a job, and it's the only job that it can do. If it has to be replaced, one life becomes anew. If I can ask what job it has, and it can answer true, it will say, the job I always have is being you. A single living skin cell that resides between my eyes. It has been there all its life and will until it dies. It lives among so many other cells, it's clear to see. It's the life, I'm the body, and it thinks that it's me. Take a look around me now and see if you can tell. The body is our universe, and I'm one living cell. A cell can do no right or wrong, though sometimes it may fail. It never will need my permission not to go to hell. One life, us, me, you. That's all we'll ever do.
Wow.
And
that's good stuff, man. Are you sure that you may be the reincarnated Nietzsche? You may be the Texican Friedrich Nietzsche, you know?
Well,
you're sort of a poetic, sort of a sensitive nihilist, you know?
Well, I caught that you were a musician in the previous guy's discussion. I was for a long time, and I still consider myself one, even though I don't play professionally anymore. But it always comes in meter and rhyme and all that stuff. But yeah, I have a lot more to say than that. So,
well, call back again sometime. We got to take a break. This is going to kick us off, so I got to take it now. But thanks, Dusty. Appreciate you. All right, Naked Lines continue on Coast to Coast AM after this little break. This is Coast. Why don't we speak to Mike out in Livermore, California, as our open, unscreened, naked lines continue tonight. How are you?
Not feeling too naked. I'm out in the park with the dog, so it's too cold to be naked.
No, understood and appreciated. It wouldn't look good in front of the cops either, I'm sure.
No, yeah, that would be my first thought. John, you're rapidly becoming one of my favorite hosts.
Well, I've
been calling George for 11 years, and we're actually buds. I've met him on a couple occasions.
Excellent.
But, you know, as a Texan boy, you know, I like your style in your interviewing, and I have to kind of, I guess, go back to a ZZ Top. You know, you're kind of a mellow down, easy guy, and you just kind of let your guest, you know, let that boy boogie woogie. Let him talk.
Well, thanks, man. I never mind a comparison being drawn between me and the little old band from Texas. Actually, Billy Gibbons taught me how to play guitar, except he just didn't know it. Because, you know, I would try and play all these guys, these other guys' guitar licks. I could get onto a few of Clapton's. And then after a while, I realized it really was the difference in the amps and the guitars. They were all kind of playing the same thing. Not really Page, but he did in the early days. But when the producers got a hold of their music that the real distinctive sound came out of it. Because, you know, a lot of people would agree that you listen to Zeppelin, for example, on you know, on record, and then you listen to them live, and you go, ooh. And just like with what happened to the Beatles, you listen to the early BBC recordings, and you go, ooh. But after George Martin got a hold of them, you go, ah, it was really good. So Billy Gibbons' guitar licks were easier to interpret, and he played that thick sound in Les Paul. And so I actually picked up my first chops from Billy Gibbons. So thanks for that, man.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the thing about him was he had that reverse lick. You know, that it was a distinct sound. He would play it forward and then play it backward.
Yep. Yeah, those guys have had a lot of fun with that band. They really have. And it's always great to see a three-piece band, just three musicians, drums, bass, and guitar. And it's just a wall of really good sound, friendly chords, and great guitar licks. It's just excellent. You know, that old kind of mush-mouth southern sound.
Back in the mid-70s, nobody knew about him, and me and my friends went to all their concerts at Winterland. I mean, we always had front row balcony. It was an automatic thing. But anyway, to get off of that,
yeah.
I've been dying to talk to you on a open line for so long. I talked to you once before, but it was with a guest, so I asked my question and went away. But I'm the kind of guy, I kind of, you know, I've been listening to Coast for a long time, and I've always been open-minded, but I scrutinize. I mean, in lack of better words, I play the devil's advocate. Where's the money? You know, I'm going to dissect anything. That's the way my mind works. I put everything up in a puzzle.
Yeah.
And it's like a jigsaw puzzle. In just the blackest sky, and I listen to the show, and I hear something, I go, oh, wait a minute. That fits into that. And it was funny, last night, I was listening to the show I recorded every night on my CC Witness, and listen to it while I deliver all day long, and he said that all these underground tunnels, you know, where they're going to hide from, well, they've already collapsed them.
Oh, yeah.
I start thinking, remember back, just a few months ago, Linda Moulton Howe doing a big thing on it on George's show about all these big bangs and explosions up in Wisconsin and on the East Coast, and these sounds that sounded earthly coming from underground, and then you got the big sinkhole in Louisiana. And it's like, there's another piece that fits into that piece over there.
Well, that's right. All the news doesn't come from Channel One. Some of the other channels have a little bit to offer as well. You know, then you got the story, or as much as you're going to get.
Oh, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And the funny thing is listening to people that they listen to the news, and they, I mean, let's take the Petraeus thing. all of a sudden it's, oh, he had an affair and he's going to resign. And boy, how convenient is this, this time of the Benghazi thing and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not the story. I've been listening to you long enough, John. I know you know that's not the story.
No, it's not.
No, we might hear the story, what, in a year or two? When it's too late to even know what it means? And what I'm saying is people have to start looking, and when they hear these stories, say immediately what they're portraying is wrong and look past. Look for the money. Follow the money. Who benefits from what? And it's not even, it used to always be, I grew up on follow the money, but now it's follow the power. The money really doesn't mean that much. It's all about power.
Did you hear Craig Hewlett last night?
Oh, yes.
Okay. You know, I asked him the question. I said, you know, do we have any hope that even if this $43 trillion bankster lawsuit, do we even have any idea that we'll get justice? Will it even get to court? And he said, it'll never get to court. You know, that's what I love about Craig Hewlett, because he's you know, he's just naturally grumpy. He's looking at it. He's cynical. And he's suspicious when he hears stuff. So he got into it pretty deeply. And that whole deal about those kids, it's like, you know, the only thing is I just wait to see what the evidence is going to be. And sometimes we're waiting a long time, because I have seen people in situations look absolutely ironclad case against them. They're guilty, and they were not guilty. And it looked really, really bad for them, but they weren't guilty at all. It's just a series of events. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with the word coincidence. It's just coincidence. It just means several things happening at once. That's like saying there are no accidents. But I would say that coincidence is definitely something that's real. I have to disagree with Obi-Wan, because I'd be John D-1, okay? So anyway, the problem that I have with this, my brother, is that, and this is your time, not mine, but you got me thinking here, it's going to take a while. We cannot just elect a new president and everything's fixed. I mean, everybody wanted to really feel good about Obama. Okay, I get that. You know, the guy's got some magic mojo that maybe he knows how to make things right. Okay, that's okay. One guy's not going to do that. It's the people. One time I asked my martial arts master many years ago, what is the phenomenon? How does a person, one of these celebrities who stands up there and on a stage or whatever, how do they make themselves big enough for their audience to look up to them and recognize them as anything other than just a regular Joe? And he said, well, they don't do it. The audience does that. And it's like, I knew that, master. I just kind of want to hear you say it, because that's how it is. So the long and the short of it is, we have to rebuild this thing from the bottom up. You can't start from the top down. This is not going to work as trickle down unless there's some divine intervention there, if you know what I mean. You have to start at the local level, and then the county level, and then the state level, the congressional level, and then the executive level. And I think we're a little short on time. But hey, what the heck? These are the interesting times. That's what we wanted, right? Kick me or kill me, just don't bore me. Is that it? Isn't that what Eastwood said in Heartbreak Ridge? Think it was. Naked Lions tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.